It's 12:37. The National Weather Service office in Lincoln reports there's a slight risk of severe thunderstorms this afternoon and this evening as a cold front moves across central Illinois. The main hazards will be flash flooding, large hail, and damaging winds. Areas that have recently received plenty of rain will need to remain particularly alert to the possibility of flash flooding. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Look for a high of 83, a south wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Showers and thunderstorms are also likely this evening. The low 67, the wind out of the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 83 and a north wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low of 57 and a light northeast wind. Wednesday, sunny with a high of 85. The wind will be out of the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday night, mostly clear with a low in the low 60s. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid 80s. Thursday night through Friday night, mostly clear with lows in the low 70s and a high Friday in the low 90s with heat index readings ranging from 95 to 100. At noon central time, Rockford reported a mostly sunny sky and 78 degrees. At O'Hare, cloudy and 73. In Bloomington, cloudy and 74. In Carbondale, light rain was reported at a temperature of 68 degrees. Indianapolis reported an overcast sky with a temperature of 72. At Willard Airport at noon, we had a report of a cloudy sky, 77 degrees, the dew point 68, the relative humidity 73%, the wind out of the southeast at 13 miles per hour, and the barometric pressure 29.79 and steady. And at 12:39, 79 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. It's been years since trains plied the 25 miles between Urbana and Danville along Route 150. Since then, it's been a long slog for supporters of a bicycle trail using the old rail line. As we continue our series, Life on Route 150, Illinois Public Media's Tom Rogers takes us to the overgrown roadside rail line and learns more about its potential transformation.
There are two ends to the old Big Four railroad line in question, one in Urbana, the other just outside Danville. But to people like Tim Bartlett, who have followed the on-and-off talk of a rail trail in its place, the end can seem like it's nowhere in sight.
You know, at one time I would probably say it would be just around the corner, but given that it's been at least 12 years since we started this process, where, you know, time is a little bit irrelevant in the sense of it just takes a lot of time to work through the all of the steps.
Tim Bartlett works for the Urbana Park District, and he heads the Champaign County Design and Conservation Foundation. That's the group that's been trying to buy the corridor from the latest owner, CSX. On this windy morning, he's showing off the right-of-way. After 16 years of disuse, the tracks have been replaced with wild bushes and small trees along parts of the route. Other portions are now parts of neatly mowed lawns. Bartlett supports the long-standing proposal for a linear park flanked by natural greenery for use by hikers, bicyclists, maybe snowmobilers in winter. But since the track was originally laid in the 19th century, details about the land rights have partially evaporated into history.
They really, in many cases, do not know how they came to acquire that piece of corridor and how they own it now.
One of the people helping track down that mystery is Rhonda Border Boos of the Rails to Trails Conservancy.
But it's very, very difficult, time-consuming, and often quite expensive to go back and do all of the research necessary to figure out how each little piece of land along that corridor actually came into being, who owns it now, and how it can legally be sold.
But in 1983, Congress gave railroads and trail supporters a way to answer those questions. The Rails to Trails law allows for what's called rail banking. Rail lines can set aside corridors like the Danville to Urbana stretch and ultimately sell the land to park groups. But the railroad keeps the right to reclaim the corridor and put down tracks again if the need arises. That, in the mind of Joe Rourke, is equivalent to theft.
It's a form of eminent domain, except you don't get paid. In eminent domain, you get paid when they take your land, right? If somebody needs to put a highway through here, they'll pay you the value of the property, and then they'll use it. In this case, they just took the land with no money changing hands. So it's not something we smile about.
Joe and his wife Jeannie say they should have a claim on some of that land. They've owned their house on Route 150 in St. Joseph for more than four decades. The street's in the front yard, the trains were in the back. When the train stopped coming, sometimes motorcyclists would trespass up and down the line. Then perturbed neighbors started blocking the path, and eventually Mother Nature took over. Jeannie Rourke worries that a rail trail would cost them their privacy, even with giant arborvitae between the corridor and their house.
Can we sit in our backyard and not have to worry about, you know, somebody walking by and, you know, I'm sitting out here reading a book and here's somebody walking in my backyard, basically. I'm not afraid of them. It's not that. It's just that there's no privacy. There would be no privacy. We don't have it on 150 and we wouldn't have it back here.
Joe Rourke fears his ownership claim may be a lost cause, but he predicts a trail will drive down the value of his property on what he thinks will eventually be a commercial corridor in St. Joe. Trail advocates, though, say lots of neighbors' other concerns evaporate when a trail opens. Gary Zico heads Champaign County Bikes. It's an organization that isn't directly involved with the trail, but is looking intently from a distance.
I think that once they're in and used, it's going to be something that people using it will appreciate. And I think the people who live along there will say, hey, I can use this as well. I'd love to, you know, have a house on a trail like that. I think it'd be great.
But like others, Zico has heard trail talk for some time without much action. CSX, for its part, has played close to the vest. And despite promises otherwise, they didn't return weeks of requests from us for an interview. Nobody mentions a purchase price, though Border Boost has heard of something in the range of $1.2 million. And Tim Bartlett says once a price is agreed to, even bigger worries take over, paying for the corridor and its development.
I think what we're trying to do right now is work on the private side. We have received a couple of initiatives to get some of the preliminary engineering work done, so that's why we're working with IDOT right now.
Supporters are itching for progress. Opponents are awaiting a move toward the inevitable. CSX is waiting to shake hands on a deal. The question they all have in mind is when. I'm Tom Rogers, Illinois Public Media.
For a slideshow of the trail and interviews with supporters and opponents, as well as other stories of life along Route 150, see our website, willconnect.org. It's 12:45. Timing could not have been better for gay activists. New York City's annual Gay Pride Parade was scheduled for yesterday, long before anyone could have known it would have turned out to be a rolling victory party. On Friday, New York became the largest state in the nation to legalize gay marriage. Lindsay Catt was one of the thousands celebrating the news.
I feel a huge sense of joy, although I must say there is a resounding feeling of we've won the battle, but now need to continue working to win the war.
Indeed, those celebrating and those not are trying to sort out just how the battle in New York will affect that larger war. NPR's Tovia Smith reports.
For one rare moment, the passage of gay marriage in New York left both sides in the debate saying essentially the same thing.
This is unquestionably huge news, not only in New York, but nationwide.
The Big Apple. So, of course, it has national implications.
The only thing distinguishing gay marriage advocate Richard Socarides from opponent Matt Barber from the Liberty Council is that Socarides was smiling and flush with hope that New York's bipartisan vote in a Republican-led Senate will encourage more lawmakers elsewhere to support gay marriage as well.
I think it's a substantial shot in the arm to the marriage equality movement. And each of these moments, each of these victories feeds off of and contributes, you know, substantially to the next one.
Public opinion polls now show a majority of Americans for the first time in favor of gay marriage. And as thousands of same-sex couples begin to marry in New York, Yale Law School professor William Eskridge says it'll further erode opposition.
Nothing triggers reconsideration more effectively than the living lives of lesbian gay couples. The more interactions Americans have with same-sex couples, the more Americans will accept same-sex marriage.
Opponents, of course, take a less sanguine view of it. New York may be huge, they say, but gay marriage is about to hit a wall, since there are just a handful of states left without a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage.
The homosexual activist lobby may have grabbed the last of the low-hanging fruit here, and another northeastern blue state.
Matt Barber with the Liberty Council is hoping New York will be a wake-up call and mobilize conservatives.
It's not the end of the marriage debate. It's not even the beginning of the end of the marriage debate.
Opponents are vowing to make good on their warnings that lawmakers who voted for gay marriage will not survive the next election, and they're pushing for a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage to be put to New York voters. Brian Brown is with the National Organization for Marriage.
This is such an important issue. This is the type of issue that the voters themselves should decide, and it shouldn't be decided by legislators who can be bought or sold. And in every state this is put to a direct vote, marriage has won.
Ultimately, the war over gay marriage may be won in court, where challenges to the federal and state Defense of Marriage Acts are underway. Advocates are hoping the New York decision reverberates there as well. As one put it, the argument against gay marriage hinges on the idea that it's just not the way things have been done. With a state like New York now joining the list of those doing it, he says, that argument carries much less weight. Tovia Smith, NPR News.
There's just a short time left to raise the remaining portion of our membership goal. Your contribution by June 30th will make a powerful impact on the programs you'll enjoy all next year. If you've received a letter asking you to renew your membership or make an additional gift, please respond as generously as you can. Give online at willpledge.org. Our website's available around the clock. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 27th of June, 2011. It was on this day, 1844, Joseph Smith, Jr., 39 years old, founder of the Latter-day Saints movement, was killed by a mob in Carthage, Illinois. He'd come from back east, where, at the age of 18, he said he'd been visited by the angel Moroni, who directed him to some gold plates on which were written the history of the Israelites, which he then translated and so wrote the Book of Mormon, on which he based